Welcome to the first episode of Misanthropy's Plotopsy Podcast. My name is Gordon Maples, writer of the Misanthropy movie blog and a somewhat obsessive film buff. Here on the Plotopsy Podcast, you can hear yet another dude on the internet talk about movies. More specifically, I'll be looking at the narratives behind the movies, their cultural context, the startling personalities surrounding them, and the curious production paths that led to their creation. I'm going to focus on memorable films, both good and bad, both new and old. I intend to be joined by guests in future dissections, but today, on the pilot, you just have me. Welcome to the Plotopsy. Scrub up. Ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka chaka, ooka, ooka, ooka.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me.
Alright, so, as you might be able to guess, today we're going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. So, one of the biggest hits of the summer of 2014 is Guardians of the Galaxy, a sort of kooky, fun, and clever sci-fi film based on a rather unlikely Marvel Comics property. So, unlike most Marvel blockbuster movies like we've become accustomed to over recent years, like, say, The Avengers or Iron Man or Thor, Guardians is not a classic franchise or even super popular. This is sort of an obscure pull from the deep archives of Marvel lore. In fact, this movie is based on a Guardians of the Galaxy lineup that only came out in 2008, not so long ago at all in comic book time. For comparison, another big movie of this summer was X-Men: Days of Future Past, which is based on one of the most famous Marvel stories of all time. It just saw its adaptation this summer after 31 years since its publication date in 1981. So part of the reason for this rise of comic book movies, in recent years anyway, that some say has gone, well, ad nauseum, to say the least, is that they carry an existing audience that is almost guaranteed to fill seats. For producers, that looks really good, and it gives them a much better chance of getting a green light if you already have an established audience and fan base. That's not really the case with this property, though, meaning it was a hell of a gamble for Marvel Studios. What I noticed as this movie was being promoted is that it had a lot of promotional money into it. I'm guessing that that's because there is such a bizarre team behind the movie, that the best way that they could make sure that people would show up, because there wasn't an established fan base so much, or at least not a very large one, was to make sure that everybody knew this movie was coming out and that it was the movie to see. It was a bold move. I don't know exactly how much money was put into this movie for promotion specifically, but the budget that's been stated, and the only number I can find, is $170 million. That's a lot of money. My prediction as this movie was coming out, knowing how large the budget was, is that this comic book movie on an obscure property, Guardians of the Galaxy, could easily have popped the comic book movie bubble. So adding to this risk, apart from the fact that it's just an obscure source material, is eccentric writer-director of Guardians of the Galaxy, James Gunn. So this guy's directorial credits are some of the most unlikely you could imagine for a big-budget director. It includes 2006 body horror cult favorite Slither, starring Nathan Fillion, 2010's darkly comic vigilante movie Super, starring a wrench-wielding Rainn Wilson of The Office, and a parody web series called PG Porn. He is not the obvious choice to put behind a $170 million Marvel movie. James Gunn started his career in movies interning and writing at the infamous B-movie outfit Troma Studios, and was a key force behind the studio's classic iambic pentameter feature, Tromeo and Juliet. In fact, if you take a close look in the prison sequence of Guardians of the Galaxy, you might just spot Troma patriarch Lloyd Kaufman. The two men are pretty close friends, and actually wrote a book together, aptly named All I Need to Know About Filmmaking I Learned from the Toxic Avenger. Despite the relative inexperience and unprovenness of James Gunn as a commercial director, the obscurity of the property, the fact that the two biggest names in the cast are relegated to voice roles, and Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper, as a talking tree and an ill-tempered raccoon to boot, and the fact that the lead was thrust upon a supporting television comedy actor in Chris Pratt of Parks and Recreation, the gamble of Guardians of the Galaxy somehow managed to pay off. Sometimes that's how good movies work. In You're Only as Good as Your Next One, legendary movie producer Mike Medavoy writes at length on how strange movies can be. and how you never quite know what will be a hit and what will be a flop. Art does not casually abide by formulas, and films are, at their core, art. Going into 1977, everyone believed that Martin Scorsese's New York, New York would be the darling of audiences and critics alike. Meanwhile, Sylvester Stallone was an unknown who just barely managed to get his boxing movie, Rocky, made and out into theaters. Sometimes the unexpected happens. The success of Guardians of the Galaxy means something. Perhaps this will open the floodgates for obscure and independent graphic novels and comics to get their chance on the big screen. Maybe James Gunn is the new Peter Jackson, raised from bizarre B-film roots into an A-list director. Perhaps Chris Pratt's success will pave the way for other funny men to get their shot in an action setting. I'm hoping that the banter-style dialogue and tone of Guardians of the Galaxy will at least catch on and continue the less gritty, more Whedon-esque trend for big-budget hero movies. Or, more cynically, perhaps the success of Guardians of the Galaxy can be attributed to the expensive and unprecedented promotional swarm by Marvel Studios. Perhaps they have proven that with enough media penetration, anything can be a blockbuster. I wouldn't be surprised to see any and all of these elements replicated in the near future. Hollywood loves imitation, especially when there is a profit to be had in it. Maybe there will be some real good to be had from this, at least for a while. The success has at least quelled my concerns over Edgar Wright's departure from Ant-Man, for now. The success of the Guardians of the Galaxy reminds me of a great quote about the founding of United Artists. For the first time, filmmakers and actors were forging their own studio, a revolutionary concept that was paving a new road and shaking up the traditional formula of movie making. In reaction to this, Metro Pictures head Richard Rowland supposedly stated that the inmates have taken over the asylum. Appropriate now for the curious success of a strange movie by an alumni of Troma Studios featuring one of the finest prison break sequences in decades. James Gunn clearly knows his Marvel comics. He did an astounding job of nodding to the diehards with countless Easter eggs throughout the movie, including Adam Warlock's cocoon in the collection of The Collector, and adapted characters from the comic series, including Cosmo the Space Dog, and my personal favorite, Yondu. Yondu, originally a blue mohawked archer from the ancient original run of Guardians of the Galaxy, was brilliantly updated for the film. The only vestiges of his original character are the subdued mohawk, blue skin, and his whistle-respondent arrow, notably without a bow in the movie. The character was perfectly played up as a roguish and dangerous wild card by the always astounding Michael Rooker, who once again brings his intimidating yet likable presence to the screen. Rooker is a personal favorite of director James Gunn, who consistently lists Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, among his favorite films, and specifically notes Michael Rooker's haunting performance in that movie as the eponymous serial killer, Henry. It is worth noting that one of the greatest strengths of Guardians of the Galaxy was the banter between characters, something that requires both brilliance from the writers on the page and the performers on screen. Rooker and Chris Pratt particularly stood out to me whenever their characters interacted, and Bradley Cooper did some exceptional work as Rocket Raccoon, who makes the audience really sympathize with the furry gunslinger. Even Dave Bautista, a professional wrestler, managed to fit his character well. In my experience, casting pro wrestlers as actors is better in theory than in practice. See Hulk Hogan in Santa with Muscles, and all of his other movies, really. Bill Goldberg in Santa's Sleigh, Rowdy Roddy Piper in Jungle Ground and They Live. But that didn't bite them here, necessarily. I think Dave Bautista fit his role relatively well. That said, Bautista and Zoe Saldana were clearly the weakest links, given primarily the limitations of their characters, which is quite a surprise given that the dialogue for Vin Diesel's Groot was limited to the phrase, "I am Groot." Speaking of which, Diesel was absolutely fantastic in this minimal role as the giant tree creature. I recently rewatched The Iron Giant, and there was clearly influence in the visual design of Groot, the eyes and the facial structure particularly, and Diesel's performance in this movie is highly reminiscent of his fantastic work there. Last but not least, Chris Pratt sold his role as Star-Lord Peter Quill, predictably nailing the comedic aspects of the role. More importantly, he did a fine job outside of his typical purview and within the more serious demands of the character. Another interesting note about Guardians of the Galaxy that distinguishes it from other hero flicks are the villains, in the sense that they just aren't that interesting. Ronan the Accuser is a very cut-and-dry movie villain, which I suppose isn't necessarily a bad thing here. It makes the stars shine brighter, so to say. It is certainly a separation in comparison to other hero movies, particularly the various incarnations of Batman, where the villains really steal the show, and are the more interesting aspects of the movie. Here, that role is really on the eccentric cast of heroes. It's something to note, at the very least. For a movie that essentially boils down to everyone chase the magical MacGuffin, Guardians of the Galaxy is overall a ludicrous amount of fun. I'm sure I wasn't the only one in the theater who didn't care about the Infinity Stones or the Gauntlet meta-plot, but it didn't seem to affect anyone's enjoyment. Guardians of the Galaxy is absolutely a movie about the journey and not the destination. Lovable cast of offbeat characters and their witty interactions made for a great experience. Perhaps most importantly of all, it was set to one hell of a soundtrack of oldie favorites, which managed to hit the top of the charts. So that's all for Guardians of the Galaxy. I recommend seeing it, maybe even a few times. I hope you have enjoyed this first episode of the Misanthropy Plotopsy Podcast, and will join me again for future episodes. You can find me online at misanthropy.com, and Misanthropy Movie Blog on Facebook, as well as at Southern Heathen on Twitter.
Together and we'll get